Hi, welcome to Training Talk. Today's video, we have Louis Parkinson.
Oh.
He's on the show, and we're going to be going through some training talk where we're going to break down some of the habits, patterns, and experiences that Louis had over the years with both training and coaching. Because I think the really nice thing about today's chat is that I'm a coach, Louis is a coach, I'm a professional climber, and so's Louis. So we have this kind of mixture of two different perspectives that we bring to the table in terms of improvement and performance.
Yeah. So
question one,
okay,
is I want to know a little bit about how you work on the power element of your climbing, because I've seen you do so much of this and you're clearly a performer in this area.
Okay, so I very rarely focus on gaining more strength. I want to be as efficient as I possibly can at using it. I think for me, having a good understanding of using momentum on the climbing wall is the key to making the most use of the power I have. Are we talking about the results from the lattice test?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think a good example for me as to how I know, or how I've seen that I'm good at using momentum rather than just having really, really strong fingers, is how the Beastmaker competitions have gone over the years.
Yeah.
Year one was just who can campus the hardest boulders, and I won. Hooray for Louis. And then every year on from there, there's been a qualifiers, which is who can campus the hardest boulders, and I've done really well in those. And then as soon as it gets to any kind of, now let's just measure who's got the strongest fingers, I get shut down every time. I'm not even close to any other people. So that's, to me, kind of demonstrated, oh, if you're good at wiggling and flicking at the right moments, you don't have to be as strong. And I saw it myself when I was training with a friend, when I was much younger at the Carson, we'd always train on the Wave together, yeah, which is this really good training board. He was loads stronger than me all the time. I was never anywhere close to him. I think he'd been a swimmer when he was younger, so he had this base level of strength, which was just shocking. He would, as a standard sort of gauge of his strength, he would come in an hour after I'd finished warming up, he'd come over to the training board, have a look at the climb I was trying, and usually on the crux hold, completely cold, still wearing his rucksack, could still crank out like a one-arm pull-up. So not even close in terms of level of strength, but we ended up balancing out pretty nicely in terms of what climbs we actually ended up finishing. And I was always looking closely and noticing, okay, yeah, so he's like landing on the holds with a lot of impact, usually like completely dead pointing to them and having to rely entirely on contact strength. And I could do the same moves, but not if I did them the same way. So I was always having to focus on land really, really softly so I had time to engage with the strength I had. So I think from younger, I kind of got a good sense of just focus on moving nicely and you've got time to engage the strength you have rather than just relying on being brutally strong the whole time. So I do some power work, but rarely on the training... sometimes on the training board, but very rarely on the campus board or on the fingerboard. I like doing like functional exercises on the climbing wall where I just climb really badly on purpose. Either doing like pull-ups midway through climbs or intentionally doing climbs the hardest way I can, or just making up silly dynamic moves and trying to catch really bad holds can be really, really fun.
Yeah, so I've seen quite a few videos of you on either the internet or social media doing these dynamic moves on the wall. And one of the things that I think is, or a question that I always ask myself is, you obviously do a lot of this now and you're at a high level. And what I always wanted to find out was, have you got to a high level of that ability to carry momentum and, you know, pace through moves because you did it right from the outset when you first started climbing? So if I took Louis Parkinson years and years ago when you were climbing V5 and V4 and V3, were you still doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, but only because I had like no semblance of technique, so my only option was just to flail for something and hope I caught it.
Right, okay.
And if I wasn't naturally that strong, then I just had to start flailing quite well. So then in terms of my progression with dynamic movement, I think now I'm quite good at it. I can do complicated dynamic moves. When I'm practicing it, it looks pretty cool. I have a good success rate. But everyone's missing the previous 10 years where I was no good at it and it was just me falling over a lot of time or doing really basic dynamic moves and slowly getting better at them. Even just like swinging around on jugs trying to campus, you learn quite a lot about using momentum carefully. Yeah. If you can just like pull really hard, but it's really, really tiring, or you can land with a lot of impact on holds and it tears your skin. And so those two things kind of just guide you naturally into doing it better. You don't want to get tired because you want to do more of it. You don't want to wear out your skin because you want to do more of it. Always really, I just wanted to climb loads. And so if I started getting tired or wearing out my skin, I couldn't climb more. So I started trying to do it very carefully all the way through, I suppose.
So in some ways it was like a self-preservation.
Yeah, kind of.
You had this feedback mechanism whereby climbing in this manner, becoming more efficient, more dynamic and carrying flow, had a positive feedback that you could go climbing more.
Yeah, exactly.
You could get up harder stuff. So you went, guess what? I'll do more of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think whenever it comes up to like a really, really hard move, like on a training board or something like that, I very rarely, like nowadays I am trying to focus more on find a smart technique, which takes like no power at all, rather than just lock off really hard and reach for it. But if there's no smart technique, I'd never really opt for lock really hard. I'd always try and just gauge the jump carefully so I can land softly on it.
Yeah. So that brings me
go on
really well to my next question that kind of follows on from that is that both of us as coaches will come across lots of people who lack in the finger strength department.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can obviously train and get their fingers stronger, but right now and in the short term, you're not going to have some massive impact on finger strength. So what kind of drills or tips or tricks do you have to get those climbers on the wall to use momentum and, you know, flow to use the finger strength that they do have?
Ooh, okay, so I've got some really basic ones that I just get people doing in their warm-ups about on like jug ladders, just taking both hands off at once and catching the next holds, or doing like claps behind the back is a really fun one because it looks really exciting. It's not that hard if you just do it on a vertical wall. And a lot of the time it's about building up confidence with using dynamic movement, especially at the lower levels anyway. If it's someone who climbs V10, but they do everything really, really statically, it's still kind of beneficial, but they'll get the hang of it really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So at a really basic level, it's just coming up with silly games where there is no option of using static technique. If you climb things one-handed, you can't lock off and then reach for the next one, it doesn't work. So you naturally start throwing your weight very carefully to the next hold. So little games on easy climbs work really nicely.
And is it always easy that you go for the gaming? Because
usually, one, because it uses your warm-up climbs really productively. You're not just mindlessly pulling on jugs all the way through.
Yeah.
And also because if I'm trying to work on a certain aspect of my climbing, it's really hard to do that if I'm pulling really, really hard. I just can't concentrate that freely. So if I'm on an easier level of climb, I've got loads of concentration to spare. I can start doing some specific stuff with it. To me, that makes a fair amount of sense.
Mm.
As climbers get better and they're already pretty decent at using momentum, then it's just about making sure it's always something challenging to work on. So just coming up with dynamic moves and trying to... an easy way of doing it is I usually do it on slabs more than on overhangs, but finding a position that you can balance in. And then this is sort of stuff that I learned from Johnny Dawes ages ago because I had a lesson with him. He's very good. He's very fun to climb with.
Yeah.
But generally the idea that if you can hold a position at all, it is technically possible to throw yourself into that position. You just have to land exactly in that shape so that you can hold it. So I'll find sketchy positions on slabs that I can hold and then work out, okay, so I can hold this. How do I run into it at 1,000 miles an hour and make sure I'm slowing down enough that I do stop in that position? And then it's just trial and error over and over and over again. And exactly the same process when I'm coaching people. We'll come up with moves that we can quickly prove, okay, you're capable of physically holding this. So every time you have a try at it, just think back going, was that too much momentum? Was it not enough momentum? Was I not putting my momentum quite in the right place? Usually just trial and error and thinking through it each time between attempts. They just learn a lot about it just going through that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of a perfect example of getting people to do that, get involved with the learning process, isn't it?
Exactly.
Where you may struggle with the thing initially, but through experimentation and fun and play, you can learn so much.
Yeah, exactly.
And it becomes rewarding to partake in that activity because it's fun, not this is so enjoyable, it's so unenjoyable improving my technique. It's hard to argue that playing games is not.
Well, exactly, yeah. Fun. I think, and as we've already talked about, this kind of reflects my own approach to climbing, which is that it should be fun. If it's, and I would kind of put a lot of importance on that when I'm training people, that the training they do it should be exciting to do. It should be fun to do, because otherwise it's hard to motivate yourself to keep on doing it. And even if I had the best training plan in the world and it was guaranteed to be the most effective and make me really, really strong, if I don't enjoy doing it, I might not stick with it. And then it's a shame because I'm now wasting a really effective training plan, but it doesn't quite work for me. So I've always focused on making sure I want it to be effective, but I'd rather find a balance between maybe not the most effective thing, but they're more likely to do a lot of it. So overall, that will have a greater impact on their climbing over time. I always try and make sure it's fun all the way through.
Okay. So going to the other end of the spectrum and dealing with things that maybe don't always feel quite as fun, you know, where the pressure is really piled on and you've got a competition, a lot of people are watching, and, you know, you can answer this from either the perspective of how you work with it or how you help others in your coaching.
Yeah.
How do you address that competition, external pressure thing?
So it's something I've gone through a long process in my own competition climbing, is learning to deal with external pressure, either physical, as in I'm getting really, really tired, I don't know if I can do that next move, and that distracting you from just executing the move nicely, or mental pressure, either I'm scared of falling off and nailing my shins on the slab on the way down, or everyone's watching and I don't want to be embarrassed and fall off now because I really wanted to do well in this competition, or whatever kind of pressure it is. Mm-hmm. Training to not pay attention to that kind of pressure is difficult. Either I try and do it through, they're kind of like drills, but just exercises where you have to climb under pressure and you just get used to it.
So it's like you force artificial pressure
in a
training scenario.
So I do a lot of this right before, like in the week leading up to a competition. It's not physically intense, but I'll set myself these challenges like, I've got to climb all of these quite tricky climbs. On their own, none of those climbs are that difficult, but I'll add all these extra rules of, I've got a time limit for one, so that makes it a bit harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't have much time to rest, so that makes it tricky. If I fall off any of them, I have to start all of them again, and I have to finish it within the time limit. If I readjust on any of them, I have to start all of them again and finish it within the time limit. Mm-hmm. Or even little things like, if I stop and hesitate even for a second on any of the climbs, that's the same as falling off, you have to start the whole lot again. So it sucks, because for a while you just get your ass kicked and you don't do any climbs. But then if you calibrate the exercise just right, then like right at the end of the time limit when you're really tired, you've been practicing the climbs as you go through that exercise. So suddenly you're, oh my God, I've done one perfectly. That's two perfectly. Oh my God, I've done the whole. Maybe you mess it up right at the last minute. But you start getting a lot of experiences of, I was tired, I was doubting myself, and then I kind of pulled it off right at the end. And you slowly get more and more experience and more confidence knowing that you've gone through that in training.
That's really interesting because what you're essentially doing there is you're training the mind to get into a process whereby you can have these external pressures and you can have these internal doubts, you know, around things like, what if I mess up? What if I don't do this? But you're building that into a training process, because ultimately when you go to a competition, you cannot take away that external process.
Exactly.
You can't take away that factor of doubt. So you're making it all become as a whole really familiar. Yeah. And then you do it lots.
Yeah,
you get
exactly.
better stuff, don't you?
Pretty much. And the other one is I'm trying to teach, especially with the junior team that I've got, we focus a lot on just what they pay attention to and what processes they go through mentally while they're at competitions or after competitions. I've got a nice little rundown of questions that I'll always ask them of, so tell me three things that, and I'll always phrase it carefully of, not three things you did badly or something like that in a negative way, but tell me three things you'd like to do better next time. Okay, now tell me three things you were really happy about. It doesn't necessarily have to be I finished a hard climb. It can be, I didn't think I'd get anywhere on this, and actually I got a couple of moves I was quite unsure about. That's quite nice. And then for me, the really important bit that I like spending a lot of time on is, what emotions were you feeling before the comp, during the comp, after the comp, and why exactly, if you can work it out, were you feeling those emotions? Because I go through this a lot of comps myself, where I had it at a Blockfest round recently where I was doing okay, but I fell off one thing, and then I fell off another one, and then I was starting to feel really frustrated, and I wasn't enjoying the comp at all suddenly. And so instead of what I would have done in the past, which is just carrying on, staying frustrated, falling off a load of other stuff, and then tearing up my score sheet and leaving early, which I've done many times when I was younger, instead, smarter Louis nowadays, I went outside, and just chilled out, took some deep breaths, and just tried to go through the whole process of, okay, I can feel it. I'm feeling frustrated because I'm feeling embarrassed, but specifically, what am I feeling embarrassed about? And I went through, I tried to work out the whole thing of, okay, I'm embarrassed because I feel like my score isn't going to be enough that I make finals. And for some reason, I think it would be embarrassing for me not to make finals because I usually make finals and maybe everyone else is expecting me to. And then by the time I'd gone through that whole process and rationalised it, I was like, it actually doesn't make a lot of sense to be embarrassed by this. And now that I've just, maybe it was just that I'd gone and chilled out for a while, I was like, oh, I feel better now. I'm going to go and get back to it. And yeah. I did better. I'd calmed down so I could focus on the climbs and I did get into finals. So hooray for me. It was nice. But similar thing with the junior team where I'll get them focusing on, okay, same competition. One of them was saying, do interrupt me and talk about other stuff if you want because I feel like I've been babbling for ages. But I like talking about this sort of stuff.
No, that's cool.
We were talking about it after and she was saying, I really hated that, what was it? Oh, she didn't like the climbing wall that it was held at. She felt like she never climbs well there. I agreed with her, there was a slightly weird moment right at the end of the comp where everyone was running out of time. She had got on a climb right before the timer ran out. And it just meant that everyone else in the room was watching her, waiting for their turn on the climb.
And so she
really didn't like the pressure of it. And that really put her off. And so she was explaining all of this to me. I was like, okay, yeah, that's good stuff to take note of. But unless you've got some way of controlling where all the competitions are held, which I don't think you're going to be able to do, and a way of controlling what the audience does, which I also don't think you're going to be able to do, instead we should focus on how can you change how you feel about these things. So it's not easy to fix, but we want to start training to be able to not care what climbing wall this is held at and not care what the audience is doing for it not to affect us.
Mm.
It's not an easy process, but it's often just reflecting on it over and over again and realizing, okay, that's what affected it. I'm going to focus on that, not letting that upset me in the future. Maybe I'll do a little bit better next time. That sort of thing.
That's really cool.
It's quite nice, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Or interesting, at the least.
Okay, so actually, this also leads quite nicely into another thing that I wanted to ask you about, and it's another kind of psychological element to climbing. And I think both you and I are quite kind of interested in this sort of stuff.
Yeah, very.
Is how have you found that choosing or just randomly coming across, and you talked about one incident earlier with this other, you know, climbing or training partner, is coming across other people to climb and train with in terms of motivation and productivity in terms of improving as a climber. Has that affected you over the years, the partnership thing that you had for like 2 months, a year, whatever it might be?
On the one hand, I really, really like training with other people because they push you in ways that you don't normally push yourself. Maybe they've got a different style of climbing, or maybe they have the same style of climbing, but they're loads better at it. And so it's quite nice as a challenge to just try and keep up with them. Mm. So I always really like that. I often have found I have much better sessions where there's someone there who I really want to impress. And so I'll just try loads harder and end up doing harder climbs that I'm not usually able to do.
This is when you're climbing with someone who's a really good climber and you're thinking, I really
want to impress them.
You need to pull it out of the bag.
Yeah. Right. But then in other ways, I actually sometimes really like training on my own. And it's something I try and stick to a lot is that if I measure myself against other people, then maybe, I mean, it's sometimes kind of a false measure because either I might look at it going, hooray, I'm better than them. And that might be just that they've got a little bit worse that week and I'm not getting any better, and I might slacken a little bit, going, oh, cool, okay, I'm doing better. Or, in any case, if I realise that I'm doing better than somebody else, I might just relax a little bit, going, cool, okay, I must be doing really well. Or, I might have a session with somebody who's loads better than me, and it's really demotivating, and so I then also lose motivation and don't train as hard. So instead, I'm just always trying to focus on, I just want to enjoy training and pushing myself in all these different ways, and I'll try and pay attention to little things, like just day by day, yesterday that problem felt really hard, today it felt quite easy, even though I didn't sleep that well, I feel really tired, but okay, cool, that's a nice little marker of progress, and I'm just always trying to focus on progress relative to myself, not relative to others, and then occasionally I go to a comp and go, oh, okay, it's still about the same level as other people, so it's kind of worked out okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like a tough balance with the fact that many of us will climb a little bit with other people, and then also on our own, and invariably, if we're quite busy and we've got a lot of work on, lots of, a lot of coaching, it can be quite a lot on our own.
Yeah.
And trying to find a way to reference our progress and how we compare to other people or competitions and everything. And like I'm exactly the same, as I have those occasional kind of chances to either climb with someone else or climb in an area where I know there's some kind of benchmark problems or things that I can compare with, I find those really useful because I could have spent you know, 10, 20, 30 sessions on my own progressing towards something, and then suddenly I get a reference point and it becomes a really good motivational tool because I go, okay, that worked, or potentially it didn't work and now I need to change up what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, I think it's just very important.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've had some occasions where, and I always find that quite reassuring because, although we're saying it's nice not to measure yourself against other people, it is useful because there are times when I'm feeling, because I don't train finger strength that much and I don't focus on physical training as much as I used to, I do quietly worry going, oh, what if I'm getting really weak now? And so it is quite nice to go and do, like at Mile End, they've got the really hard training board and Alex and Mel always does really hard campus problems. And so occasionally I'll go and try one and go, okay, no, it's okay. It's okay, Lou. I'm still strong. Or other times, a nice humbling experience where I recently was thinking, I'm getting really good at slabs nowadays. I've been practicing a lot. I'm really getting the hang of these. I think I'm probably the best slab climber now. No one's as good as Louis on a slab. And then Nathan Phillips had set a really hard slab climb at Yonder. I'd heard about it. I was like, I'm going to go try it. I'm probably going to flash it. Didn't even leave the ground. Never got anywhere on it. And then saw other people trying it. They were doing kind of fine on it. Saw Nathan try it and he literally just walks up it every time. I was like, still got some work to do. Okay, that's fine. I'm going to carry on working hard. Yeah. So it is quite good to check in occasionally. And like you say, just see what's working, what's not, and change it up if you need to.
Yeah, and I think you have a similar approach to it that I do, is that if we get that bit of feedback and unfortunately it comes back with, actually, you're not doing as well as you should be or you could be, we don't sit there and go, oh, well, this is a big problem. We cannot deal with this. It's more like, oh, actually, this is an opportunity to improve, learn, get better, stronger, fitter, whatever
it's
it might
in
be.
A way really nice to have quite clear guidance on, I don't know if you find this with coaching people, but it's always really nice when you can watch someone climb and go, oh, that's the problem. There is something really clear that we can fix quite quickly, which will make you a more efficient climber. Lovely. Mm-hmm. And it's always slightly more tricky when you watch someone climb going, you're quite good at everything, which means we just have to work on everything now instead, which is hard work, but it can be fun that way too.
Yeah. I've definitely seen that habit. And likewise, I've also seen the characteristics sometimes in some people that when you tell them about something which isn't so good and it's a weakness, and I'm thinking as a coach, this is a great opportunity. I love seeing weaknesses because we can work on this. They immediately frame it as a big problem.
I don't know about you, but I've always found it's always just really important the way you frame it to somebody, that if you tell them, oh, your footwork's terrible, that is quite a negative thing to tell someone. Whereas you could say, oh, if we just do a bit of work on your footwork, you're going to be so much more efficient, you'll be able to do all these hard climbs. You're saying the same stuff, but they can hear it very different ways. I think, like you say, some people will do that to themselves, however you say it. But as a coach, you can manage it a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, and it's definitely, part of our role as a coach.
Exactly,
So, thank you very much it's been actually just like an absolute pleasure just sort of talking through this stuff.
It's been nice, man.
And I love talking about coaching and training and,
Another time soon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. And don't forget that if you like this type of content and you want to see more, then give us feedback on our YouTube channel, Instagram and Facebook. And don't forget to click to like and subscribe, and we will catch you again here soon. And for today, that's it. Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.